écoutez CKUT 90,3 à Montréal.
Ok, merci beaucoup.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is there is this thing? Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is July 9th. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Kanyenkehaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K is for
kitten.
Cam.
See, wait. You. Unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C. K.
I can't think of a U one. T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for Montreal.
First, news. COVID-19 restrictions are continuing to ease. Fully vaccinated Canadian travelers no longer have to quarantine after crossing the border. As of today, 81% of Quebecers older than 12 have received the first dose. 40% have been fully vaccinated. Provincial officials say yesterday they're considering requiring vaccine passports this fall for non-essential service use. Health Minister Christian Dubé.
The variants is really what worries us right now, because you've seen, I'll give the example of what's happening in UK. In UK, and I'll give just a little bit of information. They have 86% of their population that have a first dose. They have 63% of population that have a second dose, which is really good. We're aiming at 80-80 on our side. In the last few weeks, unfortunately, they had quite an increase in the number of cases, like huge increase, but hospitalization and death has been very minimal. So that's a good sign. What it means is a good vaccination doesn't prevent the cases, but prevents the negative impact on hospitals and death. This is exactly what we mean. And they are facing very tough variants right now. So to your question, the first objective is to protect ourselves against those variants. Now, the reason we are insisting on the youth today, it's because they are the ones that are below what we're targeting initially of that 75%. We're okay being at 80, as very close to what UK is. But if we're able to increase the the young population, will go to 83, 84, 85, because the number will increase by the base. So I think the comparison with what's happening right now in UK is not perfect, because they're not doing the same way. But I think that's the reason I answer on the vaccination rate being important against the variant, but also for the youth approach.
And a change in the medical assistance and dying law called MAID allowed a Montrealer newly eligible to pass this week. Yves Monette had a progressive neurological disease, but could not receive this assistance until an April amendment to the law because he was not expected to die soon. Critics say the law allows people to choose suicide instead of requiring officials to provide social services to the living. And a young black man is preparing to file a complaint after being stopped by police in Montreal's East End last week. Prodil Juan Howe says he was cycling and stopped to watch a police altercation with another black man. SPVM officers then asked him for ID and handcuffed him against a wall, before finding him with a missing bicycle reflector. He believes it was a case of racial profiling. And Kenewagi community members have set up camp on a South Shore Road. They've been there since July 1st in opposition to the upcoming construction of over 200 new Chateauguay homes. Kenewagi is seeing a housing shortage themselves, and they say that land does not belong to the municipality. The Kanyenkehaga community also elected a new Grand Chief last weekend. Grand Chief Kasenen Hawawe Sky Deer is the first woman to be elected and the first person to be LGBTQ2S. The Assembly of First Nations also elected their first female national chief yesterday, Roseanne Archibald. And the city's police force is making a registry of catalytic converters. The SPVM organized their first registration site in Montreal North on Thursday. They say it's not the last registry event and hope it'll discourage rising theft rates of the car parts. You're listening to CKUT on 90.3 FM.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Le Festival international Nuit d'Afrique, présenté par la TD, vous invite cet été à sa 35e édition anniversaire. Soyez au rendez-vous du 6 au 18 juillet pour célébrer pendant 13 jours l'événement des musiques du monde. Cette édition innovante en salle, en plein air et en web diffusion vous propose une fusion entre passé et présent, riche en histoires et découvertes musicales. Découvrez toutes les surprises, infos et billetteries sur festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday Off the Hour. The time is just after 5 p.m. My name is Brian Jefferson. Because of the pandemic, our pre-recorded shows on CKUT will be a mix of original audio from Montreal and podcasts. We'll bring you back at the top of the hour to leave you with some local news that you can use.
You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade.
Thank you.
a convoy of trucks rolled into Ottawa and held a two-day protest under the name United We Roll. They're protesting the federal government's failure to prioritize the oil and gas industry, specifically declaring themselves against the carbon tax and demanding that pipelines be built. That's right, listeners, as you and me and everyone we know has spent the first couple of months of 2019 in the streets opposing pipelines and supporting Indigenous solidarity, these folks have been organizing to call out the Trudeau government for not building enough pipelines fast enough. But that's not all they're about. This protest is a child of sorts of the Yellow Vest Canada movement, a protest movement in cities across the country, but especially in Alberta, that styled themselves after the Gilets Jaunes in France, calling out the carbon tax and demanding pipelines, but also bringing together a host of other right-wing demands. Close the border, stop accepting refugees, withdraw from the UN, and calls to action. Assassinate the Prime Minister, gather your weapons, bring your friends, and build a grassroots movement against the quote-unquote Islamification of Canada. Yeah, it's pretty gross. Their demands and priorities are diverse, and it's sometimes hard to tell which of them are pro-business pipeline enthusiasts, which are neo-fascists, and which are a mix of the two. I sort of think of them like a right-wing Occupy movement, but instead of anarchists pushing their agenda and recruiting from the inside, they've got neo-Nazis, and in some places, lots of them. Already you can see divisions among them, and the truck convoy even changed its name to distance itself from the Yellow Vest movement because their overt racism was bad for the optics of what they hoped to frame as a legitimate workers' movement for pipeline construction. This week, I spoke to an anti-fascist organizer from Alberta who's been tracking these groups about their politics and the links between pro-pipeline rhetoric, Islamophobia, and far-right fascists. I also caught up with Joe, an Ottawa-based organizer who participated in the counter-rally against the United We Roll convoy last week. If you've been watching online and wondering what, if anything, these Yellow Vest rallies have to do with the Yellow Vests in France, whether they're neo-Nazis or just wingnuts, whether that matters when we know that pro-pipeline politics are racist colonial politics anyway, or anything else about this confusing and seemingly thriving movement on the right, hopefully, tonight's episode will clear a few things up. Now let's get to that interview with an anti-fascist in Alberta.
Yes, I first got involved with anti-fascist work in Calgary when the Aryan Guard was ramping up activities. And after they died out, I wasn't very active myself for a long time until the alt-right started getting more prevalent. So I've been watching the proto-fasc or the Patriots around Edmonton for a couple years now.
And have you been sort of following their activities online, like looking into them? Like what kind of stuff have you been doing?
Yeah, we've been watching them online and also checking out their rallies, listening to their speeches and how they evolve.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what the deal is with Yellow Vest Canada? Like what I need to know about Yellow Vest Canada?
So I'll tell you what I know, and that's Yellow Vest Canada, in terms of the Facebook page, is run by, I believe, a fairly younger guy called Tyler Manelafanch.
Mm-hmm. Manelafanch.
Yeah, he's profiled on ARC. Okay. That'll give you a lot more info than I have. Yeah, he's, like, quite definitely a white supremacist of sorts. Comparing his page, Yellow Vest Canada, to next most popular Yellow Vest page, which is Yellow Vests AB, you find a lot more posts about, like, globalization conspiracies, anti-immigration and migration, a lot more anti-Muslim stuff, a lot more race and culture-oriented sort of posts, whereas Yellow Vest Alberta is much more heavily economic-focused, although it still has those elements to it.
How connected or not connected are they to the actual Yellow Vest movement in France?
I would say they're not really connected at all. I think a lot of these people get snippets of what happened in France, and of course started off being kind of unclear, which I think it was to everybody, but I think the people who feed these conspiracy theory folks information, you know, took what they could to make the Yellow Vest seem like reactionary or just even anti-tax people rebelling against, you know, heavy taxation.
And in Canada, I mean, they're also talking about carbon taxes here. Do you think that that is at least part of what brought them together?
Yeah, definitely part of it. Being against the carbon tax is a common theme throughout all their rallies. But the thing that first brought the Yellow Vests out, at least in Edmonton, was the Migration Compact.
And what's that?
A non-binding UN agreement that was just talking about normalizing migration, as I understand it, ranging anywhere from kind of like just a sort of mundane stuff to ensuring, I think, a kind of temporary third world labor. But a lot of the Yellow Vest folks see this somehow as a assault on Canadian sovereignty. And yeah, it just ties into the whole like white genocide myth of white Canadians being replaced by ethnic minorities.
Is that something that they believe?
Yeah, it's quite a prominent conspiracy and theory on these groups.
Okay, so then how is that even related at all to the carbon tax? Like, how did the Yellow Vest movement in France inspire them to, like, put on Yellow Vests for that?
That's just because I think they see anybody rebelling against the government as themselves, regardless of what the politics actually are. And for the propagandists that are kind of creating this far-right reactionary movement, even before it was the Yellow Vests, I think it's quite important for them to not have these participants see themselves as part of the far-right or any sort of fringe group. They want them to see themselves as everyday people having everyday thoughts. So when they see a large rebellion, I think they just wanted to latch on to that, despite the politics being very different.
And what are some of the main issues that they're talking about inside that movement?
Mostly focuses, at least in Alberta, on economic issues, at least kind of in the public sphere, at their latest rallies. The earliest rally, the earliest couple were focused on the Migration Compact, so the speeches were very heavily anti-immigration. Some more like anti-quote-unquote illegal immigration, or sort of perpetrating this myth that immigration has drastically changed in the last 10, 20 years, or even the last year. And then quite a lot saying that the real problem with immigration started in the 70s with just opening it up more. Again, with that theory of white genocide and white replacement.
Under Pierre Trudeau, too, right? So making a like nice family dynasty connection for those who are talking about assassinating the prime minister.
Yeah, they quite like that. So that's how they first started with their couple speeches or couple rallies. And I think since having that called out and having some of the other groups that are involved do some more overtly, you know, intimidating anti-immigrant stunts, they've really tried to scale that back to just economic issues again.
Okay. And what are the specific economic issues that they're mostly talking about?
Pipelines and carbon tax.
Okay. And do you think it's the same people showing up? Like, do you think people see a link themselves between immigration and pipelines, between Islamophobia and pro-pipeline politics?
I think some do. Again, I think there is a pretty marked difference between the Facebook Yellow Vest Canada and Yellow Vest AB for Alberta. But most of the people coming out in the rallies do seem to believe in this globalist conspiracy, which loosely is that George Soros and other billionaires are funding fundamentalist Islamic groups, which they don't really differentiate from any Islamic group, to destabilize and weaken Canada so that migrants can come in and ruin the country and possibly turn it into a sort of Third Reich dictatorship sort of deal.
How much of a threat do you think these people are? How much do they exist offline, and what kinds of activities are they getting up to?
I think they're a moderate threat. I don't know if you've heard the news, but there's at least a couple Yellow Vests who have recently been discovered kind of uttering threats and stashing a lot of weapons. And it's growing quite popular, and of course, with any movement like this where you're constantly seeing death threats against people, you may have 10,000 of them online, and that's going to filter down to at least one, say, lone wolf attacker.
And do you think that's sort of the direction they're moving in, or is there more like a range of directions? Like, I think some of them are like clearly looking to move into electoral politics with Bernier. Some of them
maybe aren't sure why they're there. They're there to meet people. Like, what's the purpose of the movement for people?
Yeah, I think it is a bit of a messy movement, you know, just like it was in France. They're trying to appeal to a lot of people, and especially in Alberta with pipelines and oil being the main point of the economy. There is a wide range of opinion, but definitely some people are trying to take it electoral. Some people are trying to take it, I guess, a little more clandestine, such as like the here we've had the Sons of Odin turn into the Wolves of Odin, turn into something else, turn into the Clan, hilariously enough, but spelled with a C and two N's. And that group specifically is becoming much more of a street group. They've gone to intimidate bars and mosques, and at least one of them was talking about blowing up mosques in their online chat, although others disagreed with them, but strictly from a sort of optics vantage point of saying they can't be talking about that or doing that yet.
Do you know of any connections between explicitly far-right groups like those and more sort of populist groups like the Yellow Vest movement?
Yeah, in Edmonton, the Yellow Vest pretty much started with those sorts of groups. The first two rallies were held by a guy named Stephen Garvey, who is trying to run a political party called the National Citizens Alliance. He gave some of the most anti-immigration speeches, and then another local sort of proto-fascist named Ryan Dean did a lot of the booking of their legislature rallies. So here it started with them generally having a rally at the legislature, then marching to sort of like our city square or central square where Stephen Garvey would speak. In their group chat, a lot of them were talking about becoming admins on various pages and trying to help all these new Yellow Vest organizers in their political organization. So out here, they really made the movement possible and shaped it.
And do you think the other people involved in the movement are aware of those far-right ties? Like, are they being openly recruited by far-right groups?
Yeah, I think they are definitely aware. Some of them. I mean, there's, again, the Yellow Vest Alberta have 10,000 members online, but their largest rally in Edmonton was maybe a couple hundred and similar in Calgary. So I think at each state, there's kind of different disconnections. And then also the main group is sort of proto-fascists here, like to change their name every time that they're kind of called out. Now, though, that should mean that people attending rallies can sort of recognize them by their faces. They still seem to provide a layer of plausible deniability. Some groups have left, and Stephen Garvey, they sort of kicked out, but that was because of a disagreement dating a few years back where he invited Muslims to a rally. Yeah, the people who have kind of remained throughout the winter, I think, are very aware. Kind of in the things they're saying on the ground and in some of their earlier speeches, they're mimicking a lot of the sort of white genocide anti-immigration talking points. They're generally, you know, going out for coffees with the fascists afterwards.
Do you think it's reasonable to call the Yellow Vest movement in Canada like a proto-fascist movement, or is it just a populist or anti-tax or something movement that's been infiltrated by fascists?
I think at the moment it is still a populist movement that's been infiltrated by fascists. But I think it's very close to being a bit of a proto-fascist movement. The way a lot of these folks believe in this conspiracy that all Islam is, you know, hell-bent on destroying Western civilization, and how they seem to have been fooled into believing that they're kind of the probable last defense for Canada. And despite saying they're not racist, they, you know, love freedom and they would die for anyone's freedom, they're really being led to believe some very inflammatory things and believing conspiracies that are quite close to the ones that Hitler was putting out in the 20s.
Mm-hmm. What do you know about the United We Roll convoy, the truck convoy?
I don't know very much. I know it's being advertised as a pro-pipeline rally out to Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And I know there was a bit of a conflict between this probably AstroTurf group called Rally for Resources and I think iHeart Canadian Oil or Pipelines or something like that. But then, you know, when they got to Ottawa, they had directly out fascist, like Faith Goldie speaking. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what you mean by AstroTurf and what the Rally for Resources is?
Yeah, so Rally for Resources is a group that has been going around the province holding rallies for pipeline construction. And AstroTurf is a term for groups that seem like they're grassroots but are funded by oil companies. So I haven't found any direct proof that Rally for Resources is funded by oil companies, just some circumstantial evidence of, I think, their leader having some connections to oil development or exploration companies and maybe sharing an address with one company that does that.
And they, along with some people from Yellow Vest Canada and along with presumably some other right-wingers, have sort of come together in a bunch of ways, right?
Yeah, as I understand it, they've kind of come together and fall apart as the Yellow Vest's racism and extremism is exposed, because groups like Rally for Resources want to be a very mainstream and palatable group.
Yeah, I heard one of the spokespeople for the convoy just like on the CBC the other day, and he was trying to frame it as like, he's just an out of work guy. He just wants his job back. He doesn't even care about the oil and gas industry. Like if they gave him a job in solar, he'd take it. Do you have any sympathy for that kind of position? Like, is that plausibly true? Like, is that a situation that exists for people in Alberta right now? Like, is that a true fear? And second, like, do you care? Like, is that something that you feel for?
Yeah, I would certainly say I care. I think with our society basically revolving around work and making money, it's, you know, your key to survival. So when people are out of work, that's definitely a problem, especially when these pipeline companies are raking in millions and billions of dollars. Yet the first sign of trouble, they're laying off thousands of workers. Whether or not I believe this person in particular would rally behind renewable projects, I can't say. Are they focused heavily on pipelines? So I kind of doubt that. But I do think a lot of out-of-work people would take whatever work comes their way, whether it was pipeline or renewable.
So why would they want to go to Ottawa, I guess, is my next question. And more kind of abstractly, and maybe you'll have to guess at this, like, why do they hate Justin Trudeau so much? Why is he such a target for them?
Well, I think they want to go to Ottawa really just for the symbolism of it, probably to cross a bit of a distance and get media attention for a few days and connect with different folks as they travel. I think the hate on for Justin Trudeau is, you know, a bit of a reasonable hate, because politicians are constantly kind of making things difficult for working people. But also, the far right's really, really trying hard to lump in liberals with, say, anarchists and communists and just everybody, quote unquote, left of the center as being this socialist, what do they say? A cultural Marxist sort of boogeyman. So that's mainly why I think they pick on Trudeau and Notley over previous conservative politicians.
Do you have a sense that these groups are growing currently? Like, are they getting bigger?
I don't have much of a sense for that. I think it's a bit hard to say with the harsh winter we've been having. Their physical presence is really diminishing, but again, that could be just because of the temperature.
And what do you think moves people to show up to those rallies? Like, if someone is just on Facebook and, like, a friend of a friend of a friend is inviting them to, like, something, like, what motivates people to join this kind of movement?
I think it's really a lot of the fear-based propaganda, and they have a way of making everything seem urgent, like Motion M103, which is really just a way for politicians to pat themselves on the back talking about bigotry and Islamophobia. You know, was going to destroy Canada in like a year or something. It's been a couple of years since that. The Migration Compact is going to end Canadian sovereignty forever. This propaganda has a way of making everything seem urgent and absolutely devastating. And I think once people start believing in these conspiracies, they start buying that and they think, you know, if they don't get out now, the world as they know it is basically going to end.
And what are some of the directions that you think the right in Alberta is going in right now? Like, what are some of the moves that you think they might make?
Well, there's certainly from Jason Kenney and a few other, as a backbencher or less prominent politicians, there's definitely a lot of dog whistling. I don't know what that will really mean for Alberta politics. I'm sure if they get in, there will be a lot more sort of corporate welfare and cuts to social services.
What about the grassroots right, though? Do you think that they are focused right now mainly on the election that's coming up quite soon? Are they focused on mobilizing more people for their rallies? Like, what are their, like, sort of medium-term goals?
Right. I think they're more focused on getting people out onto their side. I think conservative wins in elections will definitely garner them, but they do still have a sort of anti-politician side to them. Again, relating to that whole globalism conspiracy, they are still distrustful of politicians, and there is quite a lot of debate on whether or not somebody will do what they see as effective change for Canada or Alberta.
What about Maxime Bernier's new party? Do you think it's possible for that to gain traction in Alberta?
No, it's gained a lot of traction in Alberta. There's a lot of debate around whether they should vote for Bernier or Scheer. And I think the majority of them are siding with Bernier.
Okay. Do you think it's possible to talk about these kinds of groups while still differentiating ourselves from liberals? Like, is it possible to be like, yeah, I also hate Justin Trudeau, but I hate you too, you know?
Yeah, I think it's very important for us to differentiate ourselves to liberals and liberal politics. You know, the way they've brought in globalization and use these progressive ideas to just further corporate interests. And it's also a bit of an opening when they expect you to be a liberal supporter or a communist, and you tell them you're not into either of those things. It can open up some doors for communication if people aren't totally closed off by the conspiracies they've been given.
Do you think it's worthwhile to try to talk to some of the people who are within these movements? Is there any point in trying to draw people away from something like Yellow Vest Canada or the United We Rule Convoy and, like, towards something that we are more behind?
Yeah, I definitely think there's an effort in that. I think the far right is becoming, well, I think it is the closest it's ever been to mimicking the fascist movement of the 20s. They've gone away from the obvious skinhead image, which everybody knows and associates as racist, to being something that a lot more people are connecting with and actually becoming a movement. So I think it's extremely important to find out where we can kind of interrupt that pulling of people into these fascist conspiracies and turn them against them.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's true that there's more right-wing activity or more far-right activity in Alberta than elsewhere in Canada, or is that just like a stereotype about Alberta that people hold outside?
It's kind of hard to say, as I'm not too familiar with a lot of the far-right organizing outside of Alberta. I believe we have had the largest Yellow Vest rallies, with a couple hundred in Edmonton and I think 100 in Calgary. And those were when they were doing a lot of anti-immigration speeches and a lot of fear of white replacement. But without having something to compare it to elsewhere, I'm not too sure.
And certainly, like, it would make sense if people were more concerned about the oil and gas industry in Alberta. Like, that would not be surprising, given, like, the economy of the province.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of connection to oil and gas. And I guess it's also probably worth noting that, you know, Ezra Levant has been operating out of Alberta for quite a few years when he was just a commenter for Sun Media. But now that he's started the Rebel in Alberta, and that's kind of his home base, I wouldn't be surprised if Alberta is actually a bit more far right with having that connection here.
People are watching the Rebel, like, across Canada too, but yeah, that makes sense. What do you think should be done about these populist groups like United We Rule or like Yellow Vest organizations in various cities? Do you think it makes sense to treat them like fascists, or are they something else that deserve a different kind of treatment?
I think that's something locally we're still trying to figure out. From what we can tell, we think there's some more classic fascists infiltrating, like very few, but I think a lot of it comes down to these conspiracies where people are being strung along with things that are very similar to what Hitler was talking about in the 20s, while still thinking that they are absolutely pro-democracy and pro-freedom. So I think anti-fascism does need to take a bit of a reevaluation and kind of deal with the fact that we can't no-platform them online. And the only way that that's been kind of suggested is by giving more power to corporations, which have already, you know, echo-chambered us and allowed this movement to grow for years before people kind of seen it showing its face.
Can you expand on that a bit? Like, what do you think the role of social media is in this whole thing?
Yeah, the social media algorithms have contained people in their own sort of circles, receiving information that they like to see. And I think creating groups of people that have very differing opinions and sort of understandings of reality based on the news articles or media that's been shared to them through these algorithms in Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly true for us also, right? Like, we see, like, I think it's possible to imagine a world that has sort of like a left base, like a left, like leaning kind of set of assumptions or common senses. If we just look online, obviously to someone who's joining the Yellow Vest movement, things probably look kind of the opposite of that. Do you think that these movements, like, how reliant are they on social media? Like, could this have come to pass without that kind of like online chatter that seems to be the basis for a lot of it?
Yeah, I think the social media is extremely important for them. Most things that I see people sharing are a lot of live videos from other people or a lot of things that can be manipulated in the digital age, like, you know, certain editing of videos or splicing together of images that perhaps aren't related or replaying images from one incident and claiming that it's something else. So I think it would have been a lot harder if there was no social media and people had to do this through word of mouth.
Do you think the Yellow Vest movement will keep existing in any form? Like, do you think that that number of people you're talking about, like hundreds of people coming out to rallies, largely about like pipelines and oil and gas, do you think there's a future for that number of people being in one place at one time as like a right-wing movement?
I think it's too hard to say until the spring rolls around and we can see whether it was the weather holding people back or a disillusionment or even a realization that locally their movement has really been created by these proto-fascists.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that people are joining fascist groups through that populist movement?
Yeah, I definitely think they've used that for recruitment quite well. But I believe most of their recruitment still comes just through sharing their inflammatory videos online and making people think that there's this Islamic invasion happening to Canada.
Mm-hmm. What about the pipeline issue? Do you think that, like, is there a movement that's, like, sort of more genuinely about economic issues that's, like, forming its own groups that might have some longevity? Like, is there a lobby for oil and gas that, like, may or may not remain connected to the far right but exists?
There's certainly always been a lobby for oil and gas. How far right it is would be hard to say, as it's generally a business lobby and they would kind of go with whatever makes them money. I think so long as economic conditions remain a bit poor, the right will continue to use it as a mobilizing tool.
So like a bunch of people across so-called Canada have spent the last couple of months like actually opposing pipeline projects specifically in solidarity with people on Wet'suwet'en territory in BC. And like those people and people who I'm surrounded by a lot of the time, they think Justin Trudeau is like good for pipelines and bad for them. Why is there so much disagreement, I guess, about whether or not Justin Trudeau is actually like a politician who is good for oil and gas?
I think probably because this is the first time, at least that I'm aware in Canadian history, where a large pipeline project has not gone through. And then for people...
And you're talking about, in that case, you're talking about like which pipeline?
Mainly I'm talking about the Trans Mountain pipeline that the government bought. I don't know how many... Well, I guess the Coastal GasLink is essentially going through at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I believe it's just Trans Mountain.
Right, but he's saying it's going to happen, right? He's saying he bought it so that it could happen. Like, he's like, I think that the intention of that is to appear actually sympathetic to people who care about pipelines.
Yeah, that may be the intention, you know, but Trudeau's being so demonized as being part of the globalist movement and being part of fundamentalist Islam conspiracies and, you know, just some of the real conspiracy embedded people, literally Satan. So they're quite skeptical of that. I think there's also a lot of talk about Bill C-69, which changed the approval process to actually consult more with the indigenous populations that pipelines cross past or move through. So when Trans Mountain Pipeline wasn't approved, there was quite a lot of criticizing this bill, not because it tried to be fair in any way, but simply that it didn't end up with a pipeline being built.
Do you have any sense of what is like upcoming for folks in Alberta or elsewhere in terms of resistance to various forms of right-wing activity?
What exactly it's going to look like, I'm not sure, but I'm definitely seeing a lot of energy. Edmonton had a round dance on one of our main streets a few months ago, just after the Ginnamdan clan checkpoint was demolished and people were arrested. And that easily reached 100 people, which I haven't seen in anywhere in Alberta before for this sort of thing. So amongst the youth, there's definitely a lot of energy and interest. And they want to resist. They want to start fighting back. But I just don't know what shape that's going to take yet.
Homophobes, Aryan nations and hammer skins. You can wear my nuts on your Nazi chins. I love a man in uniform.
And just what exactly are the great historical accomplishments of your race that make you proud to be white? Capitalism, slavery, genocide, sitcoms. This is your pumpkin white history, my friend. So why don't we start making history worth being about and start fighting the real pumpkin enemy?
Swastikas and Klan robes. Sexist, racist, homophobes. This one's for the master race. My brown power ass in your white power face. Kill them all.
You're listening to From Embers on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, or you might be listening to the podcast edition of From Embers Online. And this week we are talking about the Yellow Vest Canada movement, anti-fascism, and the United We Rule convoy of pro-pipeline advocates with some racists thrown in who protested in Ottawa last week. Next up, I've got an interview with Joe Wilson, an anti-fascist organizer based in Ottawa, Ontario.
My name is Joe Wilson, and I am an anti-fascist organizer based in Ottawa.
And what group or organization are you part of, if any?
I'm part of Ottawa Against Fascism and the General Defense Committee, Local 6.
And can you explain a little bit about what the General Defense Committee is and what it does?
So the General Defense Committee works on mostly anti-repression and anti-fascist work throughout the city. It's based within the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, but we're our own separate, like, union.
And you have been doing, I guess, some anti-fascist work in Ottawa with those two groups. What kinds of things have been happening in Ottawa prior to last week?
Well, we had a bit of a period of quietness for a little while. In December, we had a counter rally against a few far right groups that had come to Parliament from Quebec, but mostly solidarity actions.
So last week, a convoy of trucks rolled into Ottawa, part of a group from Alberta calling itself United We Roll right now. What can you tell me? What do you know about those folks?
So the United We Roll convoy consists of two groups, basically the pro-pipeline people and the far-right yellow vest fascists, basically. And what happened was the organizer, Glenn Carrot, realized that a lot of the Yellow Vest people kind of associated themselves with these, like, far-right conspiracy racist ideologies, and so he wanted to separate himself from that. So it was originally the Yellow Vest Convoy, and it changed to the United We Rule Convoy. But in the end, it consists of the pro-pipeline people and the far-right fascists.
And those two groups are kind of working together, or what's the dynamic between the two?
In a way. I mean, like, they were both present at the rally, but you could tell there's a little bit of a desire to separate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are all very anti-pipeline, but, you know, like, I could see that bit of a separation, but there are people who had a mix of both there, obviously.
Mm-hmm. What is your sense of the size of their movement and how much or what kind of a threat they are right now?
Their movement's pretty small, but it is growing. And that's the thing that really worries us a little bit, is obviously, like, when it started out, it was a few people in Ottawa and a few people out west. So we didn't feel the need to, like, really start going for it. But as it grows, we see that, like, this is a potential to be something very worrisome.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, like, what's the nature of that threat? Like, I think some elements of that movement seem to be sort of going in, like, an electoral direction, like, taking over the government. But some of them are still much more interested in, like, street action and specifically targeting, like, actual bodies out in the world. What sorts of threats are you thinking about when you organize against them?
There are a couple threats in that sense. Like, I know what you're saying about the electoral. You know, we have people like Andrew Scheer and Maxime Bernier from different political parties who are coming and representing these movements. But we do also see, like, when we have, like, you know, the far-right Nazis and fascists that co-opt this movement, it does pose a risk towards, like, marginalized groups.
And who do you think these people are in terms of demographics? Like, where are they from? Are they white? Are they men? Like, what do you know about them based on watching their crowd?
So it consists mainly of, like, older white men. I'd say, like, older white middle-class men. You know, definitely about baby boomer age. I've seen a few, like, women and, like, racialized people in the same movement. So, like, there's a few indigenous Yellow Vest organizers here in Ottawa and a few women. And then you have, like, Faith Goldie. Faith Goldie isn't necessarily Yellow Vest, but she definitely supports it. Mm-hmm. So, like, as much as it does, like, consist of your regular, like, white middle-class older men, like, you will see women and indigenous people in the movement.
And what about like language or nationality? Like, there's been a whole sort of parallel movement in Quebec with groups like La Meute and like Storm Alliance and stuff existing there, and actually I think they've been growing and quite strong for the last few years. And then there's this kind of other nascent thing in English Canada, a lot out west, but also some in Ontario. But then Ottawa's kind of like, the National Capital Region is kind of right on the border. Did you see any of the groups from Quebec there? Do you have a sense they're working together on this, or is it sort of a separate thing?
There were a little bit of, I think there were Soldiers of Odin at the last event. QAnon was definitely there. Mm-hmm. So, like, some Quebec groups were there.
But not, like, in force? Like, not, like, you didn't sort of see this as, like, an offshoot of the Quebec movement so much as the thing that comes from Alberta, the Yellow Vest kind of thing?
Yeah, it was mostly people that came from out west.
Okay. And why did your group choose to specifically target the United We Rule Convoy? Like, what about them in particular kind of moved you to action?
The thing is they hide behind the pro-pipeline kind of, like, movement and the pro-pipeline, you know, sentiments. But the thing is, like, when you look deeper into it, you have the intense far-right people that really oppose certain things. They oppose, like, safe migration, open borders. They oppose a lot of things. And it becomes very conspiracy theory. But our approach to it was more of an indigenous solidarity, where we, like, focused our energy on the pro-pipeline, not the pro-pipeline, sorry, the anti-pipeline organizers out west who are fighting for this thing, you know, fighting against this thing that the pro-pipeline people want. So while we were opposing, you know, the Yellow Vest movement, we were also supporting the people in the Wet'suwet'en territories. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting the timing. Like a lot of us sort of like across the country have been doing a lot of solidarity actions the last couple of months with folks out west in Wet'suwet'en territory. And basically at the same time, there's this like growing pro-pipeline movement happening in Alberta. I was wondering if you folks would be sort of making links with that solidarity, and it sounds like you did. That's cool. Can you tell me about the day? So can you tell the story of how it went? What kinds of things you chose to do to oppose the convoy? I guess 2 days, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, definitely. So we had an elder who led us in ceremony. So we gathered around 10 in the morning, and we met all together like outside of the site, and we marched together right in front of Parliament on Wellington. And our plan was to kind of hold Wellington as long as we could. So what we did was we got to Wellington and we spread out in a circle. From there we had drummers and round dances, and we had smudged everybody there, and we made sure to form like a circle of protection, like with tobacco, which is a very important thing in like Indigenous culture. And we had a water ceremony. So basically the elder talked about how we're all made of water, and water like consists, you know, it's our life. It's what we need to survive. And we need to take care of the water that's inside us just as much as we're going to be taking care of the water by opposing these pipelines. So it was a really great link to like understanding why pipelines are not good. Mm. And it was just a very strong thing where we just kind of held our ground for hours. And we were able to kind of drown out a lot of the, if not drown out, at least ignore a lot of the Yellow Vest movement people. Unfortunately, there were some people on the Yellow Vest side who were very disrespectful during like very important parts, like during chanting. You might have seen some videos where some people on that lift were dancing. Mm-hmm. Mockingly dancing and stuff like that, and just trying really hard to drown us out with their horns. So you can tell it was very disrespectful on their side and ignorant, and they didn't understand the importance of ceremony. So we stayed there and we held our ground for quite a few hours until they decided that they wanted to leave. And at that point we decided like the best move tactically, because we had such a like diverse group of people, like it wasn't just anti-fascist, we also had another like Indigenous solidarity group working with us. We had people from the Power Shift conference, so like it was a youth activism convention and stuff like that. So we had a diverse group of people. We figured that holding them there wouldn't be the best thing, so we let them clear out. So in the end we outlasted them, and we were able to kind of like hold our space and drown them out a little bit, where like a lot of people didn't realize what was going on. I had a friend tell me that a lot of people walked by and were saying that it was the like the anti-pipeline protest. Like they didn't even have anything to say about like the Yellow Vest pro-pipeline movements.
So you'd consider that a successful action then, I guess?
Yeah, definitely.
Was there any like reaction that you got from them, from passersby, from the police?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think the police expected us to hold Wellington like we did. They definitely thought we were gonna. They had a spot for us ready. But you know, we came in and we took the whole street. We, you know, we made that space our own, and that really like shocked the cops. Mm-hmm. And it was a little tense, like, it was very, like, strong, you could feel the energy, but you could tell that the cops were looking for a reason to escalate things. You know, they, but, like, it's an Indigenous solidarity action, like, there's nothing to escalate. So you could, like, they were definitely looking for something, and I feel like we did really well tactically. The Yellow Vest fascist people were very angry with our presence, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, there was a lot of disrespect from them in terms of mocking indigenous ceremony and mocking songs.
Mm-hmm. Was there any engagement between the two groups? Like, were people yelling? Were people touching each other?
There was definitely a bit of yelling. A couple of people started to get a little worked up, and they had to be talked down from a fight because, unfortunately, like, we just decided this wasn't the kind of action mm-hmm. where we were going to go and, like, you know, have any kind of physical altercation.
Mm-hmm. And why was that choice made?
Because, like, we had to understand that we were being led by an elder, like an mm-hmm. indigenous elder. We wanted to follow this person's direction and not, like, mm-hmm. not like have people get caught up in their own personal anger.
Mm-hmm. So, like, they're saying, like, a range of things. They're saying, like, assassinate the prime minister. They're saying close the border. They're saying build the pipeline. And some of the rhetoric in the mainstream media has very much been about, like, working people who want to protect their jobs, who just want to be at work. Do you have, like, any sympathy for that position? Like, is there any truth in that, or is that just, like, a front for something else?
I think it's a front, honestly, because, like, the thing is, these people talk about jobs as if there isn't any other place to have, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many other ways to get jobs. You can tell it's just one of those things where I've noticed it in a lot of different areas of, like, these really weird, messed up conspiracy theories where they'll try to take a very simple cause that looks good and they say they're trying to advocate for that. But really, it's just they're just trying to, like, not weaponize that, but use it as a tool to look better.
So, like, I guess the IWW is, like, a, like, historically, like, a working class organization. And, like, these people are gaining support, I think, partly by targeting people who feel, like, actually feel like either they're out of work or, like, they're being overtaxed or whatever. Like, they blame that for their poverty or for their, like, sense of lack of power in this world. Is there any work being done to try to, like, speak to people who might be in their target but who are not yet joining that, like, fascist movement? Like, is there some sense of, like, a turf war there between the IWW and groups like that?
Yeah, well, like, I'm not necessarily with the IWW. Like, GDC is its own thing, like, mm-hmm. that's based off the IWW, but, like, we do work a lot. We do try to, like, talk to a lot of people about, like, working class stuff.
Hi. This is Sarah Jesmer with the CKUT News Collective. You were just listening to a broadcast from the group From Embers. It's from February of 2019. If you want to hear the rest, you can check out all of their content at fromembers.libsyn.com.
CKUT Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Welcome back to CKUT. My name is Brian Jefferson, and this is Off the Hour. Before we go, some news you can use. The Festival Nuit d'Afrique has now begun. It's the 35th anniversary edition and features African, Caribbean, and Latin American music. The festival takes place indoors, outdoors, and online, and runs until the 18th. Visit festivalnuitdafrique.com for more information. And free athletic activities are coming to the plateau's parks. The Burroughs Community Center is offering ultimate frisbee, fitness training, parkour, Zumba, and urban dance. Spots are limited, so just search Bouger Danse Les Parcs du Plateau to find out how to register. And an annual free documentary festival, Cinéma Sous les Étoiles, returns next week. It features 32 night screenings and, quote, socially engaged documentary films, end quote, in various city parks. The festival starts Tuesday, July 13th in Park Laurier and runs until August 27th. And a week of action in support of migrants with precarious status starts soon. It's organized by community group Solidarity Across Borders, and it ends with busing SAB members to Ottawa for a mass march in the capital. Visit the ssf.sab Instagram page for more details. And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective. The collective includes me, Brian Jefferson, Alice Wu, Kate Addison, Joel Somadal, and Sarah Jesmer. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
CKUT 90.3 FM is proud to rebroadcast the following program entirely in the Mohawk language. The Mohawk, or Ganyatgahaga, are the original people of the unceded traditional territory known as Montreal, or Chojaake. The Ganyatgahaga, or people of the Flint, have two communities close by, and they are working hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR, reviving Ganasadage Radio. And now, listen to Chojaake's indigenous language on CKUT.
Gwe gwe, sawa gwe gwe, ne kati wahi gigo ne.